Due to the graphic nature of this program, listener discretion is advised.
Deviants, welcome to show. I am the Clinteris, and I am here with
the Gooch
and the Diva Slack.
And we are the Social Deviants, who are here today to discuss the initial installation of what they are now terming the East Rail 777 trilogy, and that is Unbreakable, starring Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson, released in 2000. You know, for some reason, when I was watching this film, I know you guys are going to talk some bullshit and everything like that, and Gooch is breathing really loudly, but hopefully that doesn't show up.
Oh, is it really? Okay, hold on,
No, I don't see it on mine.
Good.
So I'm
looking
good.
That's fine.
Yeah. That just means that Lucho is known for putting his nose inside of the microphone.
Dude,
I'm sorry,
I have a big ass schnoz. That's why do you think I have to keep fucking facial hair on and shit, dude? It has to keep sticks away from the schnoz. Sorry, continue.
No, it's fine. There was, you know, this film actually had me, I thought I remembered the film being pretty calm, pretty easy to watch, but it actually had me a little bit on edge when I was watching it. There was a bunch of sudden cuts and sounds, like a couple times like even startled me because I wasn't expecting it to happen. I don't know why.
I felt the same way, dude. I was like, I don't remember feeling this like out of place watching this movie when I was a year. I mean, we were younger, so maybe we didn't care as much. Like now we actually may have some feelings compared to when we were younger. But
don't tell lies.
Well, we have things to lose now. I mean, you can feel for the poor guy, right? And I felt that he's watching the whole movie. Like when you, towards the end there, dude, I knew what was going to happen, but I was on edge, fool.
Yeah, it was
so long since I'd seen this movie.
There was so much
that I personally didn't even remember. Like there's key points that you remember, right? Like when David Dunn first meets Mr. Glass,
right.
When Mr. Glass falls down the stairs for the first time, there's those things that you remember, but like, I tried watching it again probably maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and I couldn't get past the first 5 minutes because when the baby's being born and they're like, did you drop this baby? And they're like, no, why would I do such a thing? Why would you even accuse me of doing that? And they're like, because he's got broken arms, broken legs. Like that scene alone, very, very beginning of the movie, like it just freaked me out.
You know what I had totally forgotten about was that, you know, when he's in the train, right? And, the camera pretty when he's like when they're looking at him, the camera is pretty much a little girl that was staring at him, right?
Yeah, that's cinematography really, is amazing.
And how the camera pans, it's literally like her looking at him, like him striking out with this girl, right? And it's funny because this little girl's watching him try to get some poon, and I thought that was hilarious.
Did you think that he was a creeper?
You know what? He comes off like a creeper, dude. And honestly, he kind of looks like a creeper in that one. And the way he talks, that low voice, is like, how you going?
Yeah. They also play it out later in the movie where all of a sudden you know that there's marital trouble. So he's
I had forgotten that Robin Wright was his wife too.
But you have to think like he's a guy who probably hasn't been in that game for so long that. He like when you watch him, he looks like a teenager trying to flirt with a girl.
Yeah,
he
does look like a college freshman.
As the story progresses, you realize that he was he in college when he got in the car crash?
Yeah, he was a college.
Yeah, so he's still a kid, and like the woman that he meets and falls in love with, marries, has a kid with, like that was probably the last woman that he ever tried really hard with. So it's like this is probably one of the first times where he's trying to flirt with a female. And it just, it's so awkward. It's just like, oh man, like, and then the second he looks down, like he looks at her and then he takes his ring off. It's like, oh dude, this is trouble.
Yeah, it's creep central right there.
And he was like leering and staring at her.
Yeah, seriously, dude. Like, he like saw her like, I mean, she had a nice belly. That'd be me, fool. I'd be staring there too. I'm like, God damn it.
That's the chick from General's Daughter, by the way, that gets raped.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the same actress. I didn't know that. I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know, well, I mean, you did mention that the direction in that scene was amazing, right? Like how they used the C to obscure his view, like the kid was looking back and forth, like you mentioned. There's a couple other scenes that were like that I wanted to point out. Like, there's a scene right when the guy, Michael Kelly, the guy from he's in House of Cards and he plays a doctor at the very beginning, who's asking him, you know, are you okay and everything like that.
Dude from Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they pan
that's
out.
That's CJ with the handlebars.
Yeah, it is. He's fucking awesome. On a fucking badass power
motherfucker
trip
right there.
They pan out like the camera backs up, and eventually you notice that in the forefront there's a dead body that's covered, and as they're talking,
the blood on the dead body continues to.
That person's still alive.
Yeah,
the blood is continuing to expand. And it expands perfectly. Oh damn, that's probably gonna come up. But right as that came out, I thought that was awesome. And then right after that, he goes into the waiting room with the kid and everything, and it's one shot. They show the kid, they pan around to him, to his wife, to them hugging, then back around to all the people that are looking at them, all the reporters and everything like that, and then they walk and it follows him, and it's just one uninterrupted shot. It's just
And there's another scene when he first goes to meet Mr. Glass, or I don't know if it's the first time or the second time, but he's standing there and Mr. Glass is talking, asking him like, oh, has this ever happened to you? Has this ever happened to you? And the shot starts off with David Dunn on the left side of the screen. And then David Dunn's talking and he's talking and the camera is just tracking and it goes all the way until Dunn's on the other side. And it's a weird, weird shot. And it's something that you don't normally see, but there's just something about it that when I was watching, I was like, man, like it's weird because it put me in that place.
Dude.
And I personally really can't explain it all that well, but because he's just going from left to right, but I'm like, okay, it made me connect with that character that much more because it's the focus is just on him. There's no cutting away from him. You're hearing his story, but you know that there's something else going on because the camera's still moving.
Yeah, there's even another scene right when he goes into the house at the very end and he's trying to free everyone. When he first walks into the room where the wife is tied up, you're standing from outside the room when the glass door is open and the curtain is obscuring what's in the room, and it's perfect because the curtain is moving and you see her, and then the curtain moves and then you see him when he first walks in, and then they use that same prop to when he's standing there and he finally turns around and the guy's there to obscure his face, and that actually like gave me goosebumps when I saw that. I was like, this is there's just a deliberateness, a cleanness to M. Night's direction. It's patient, it's methodical, it's immediate, and even when you start the movie it's immediately striking, honestly, how what he's trying to do cinematography wise with this film. It's amazing. Yeah. Another thing I noticed is there's a lot of visual storytelling. There's just a lot of silence sometimes, not even music, just silence.
It's just silence. It's like, just like weather, him walking through the town, or like him driving through the, like with the rain, when he goes into discover like the train, where he goes to look at the train and how he survived it. Literally, there's no sound other than him walking through, him like jumping over the fence, walking, breaking into the building, and then there's a flashback of him like was surviving the train wreck. All that up until there, there's like literally there's no, it's all ambient sound. You know, it's all, you know, just the sound of the fire and you know, just the background. I thought it was great.
What did you get?
And
go
I think ahead. Another sh- I think another shot that should be like recognized that I don't really hear a lot of whenever people talk about Unbreakable is when the kid, like, because after Bruce and his kid are like, they're lifting the weights and the kid's putting all the weight on there, and he's just ripping 350 reps just like he's a fucking pro NFL player.
Did you think he was really lifting those weights, by the way?
No, I doubt it.
Oh, no, that was all fake.
That's
no,
all fake.
I mean, his acting was great in that scene, though. He really looked like he was
But
struggling.
He's an actor. Of course it's going to be great. I mean, look at the kid isn't an actor. He's garbage in this movie.
Actor. But anyways, going back. So there's a scene where Bruce and Robin White, they're kind of starting to rekindle their relationship, right? And then they turn around, and then they're like, what are you doing? And the kid's got the gun on the table.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
And like, he's going to go, like, he's pointing the gun at David Dunn. He's going to pull the trigger. But one thing about that shot is it gets to a point to where they all start interacting about not shooting the dad. There's no cuts. It's a one single shot. And one thing I really love about that is the fact that it creates tension, because with a lot of these action movies, everything cuts so fast and the cameras shake and whatever, it's hard to see what's going on.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that it's not an action movie. It's like a suspense film.
No, it's not. But what it does is, because it doesn't cut away, like it doesn't cut from the kid to Bruce Willis, from the kid to the mom or anything. Like, they pan out to show these other people, and then it, like, the tension stays.
Yeah, it's like,
but when it cuts, then the tension immediately goes away and you get a new sense of tension. But because it's one continuous shot, it's building. Like, when I was watching it, I'm like, dude, he's gonna shoot this guy, and I don't think the bullet's gonna bounce off him. Like, I was actually worried. And then the kid puts the gun down, I'm like, oh my god.
Well, I mean, this was a staple of early Shyamalan, though. I mean, you see a lot of that in The Sixth Sense. I mean, with the one shot, you know, type thing, where like they pan down to what's your face on the underneath the bed. It's kind of the same thing, but it was really good, you know. And they did that in I don't know if that one was one shot, but the way they did it, it seemed like it was in one shot, right? I understand what you're saying. The only problem is that I don't think the kid was very good in the film, and it's a little bit of a detriment to the movie.
Well, we'll talk about when we talk about the Kim Coppola Award, Gooch. Jumping the gun.
All right, sorry. It's one of the sour points of the whole film. I think they could have gotten a better kid. The whole film's. I mean, if you haven't seen it, honestly, it's a great fucking film. I had forgotten how good it actually is.
I wanted to get back to the music. We were talking about the music. The main theme. I don't know if it's the main theme, but like the main one when like something's gonna actually happen. Every time I heard that, it sounded extremely dated. Like, it almost sounded like it was like Enigma, Return to Innocence, or Enya, or Art of Noise, or something like that. I was like,
"Well, it's 2000. What would you expect?"
So, but I don't know. It just seemed
sail away, sail away, sail away.
So you listen to some Yanni and shit back
another
there.
Another thing is, there's no cell phones in the movie. They were calling each other on landlines, which was interesting.
It was 2004.
And leaving like answering machine messages.
And he's like, it's 2000,
hey,
and he was
Star Tacs.
And he's not true, but he's not like a rich person. He's like, it's a normal dude. Normal people didn't like normal
Working
a security guard.
At
yeah, exactly. He didn't have a cell phone at the time.
I know another interesting thing I thought was, there's like a shot where Samuel L. gets into his car and it's all padded up.
Oh, that's awesome.
What was that? It's like rubber or foam or something?
I don't know, dude.
No, it's velvet.
What is this? Velvet? It's beautiful.
I don't know, dude. It's just for ambiance. I mean, it's to show that he needs, you know, especially in a car where, you know, you can kind of bump.
Yeah.
He needs extra padding and stuff. That's what all it is. Who knows? It could be cotton for all we know.
You mentioned this earlier, Gooch, that it wasn't an action film, but do you think that this is a superhero film?
No. No, it's pure suspense. Because it's like, if it is a superhero film, it's an origin film, I guess. But I don't think it's an action.
100% it is a superhero film.
No, you're dumb, Devo. It's not a superhero. It might have been at one time. Now it might be a superhero film, but it was nothing but suspense. That's what Nim Shalala was for.
Who's impervious to pain versus his supervillain who is just like, you look at him and he shatters.
But he's abnormally intelligent.
And the guy comes to realization that he's got this ability and he can help people, and he goes into a train station and he realizes he could touch people and sense their bad doings. That's a superhero ability.
Well, then,
and he goes through and he uses it to his advantage.
So then you're telling me
finds a murderer.
So Sixth Sense,
and he goes after the guy.
Sixth Sense is a superhero film because that fool can see dead people.
Stop it!
It's
Gooch.
The same fucking thing.
Gooch.
It's there's a human being that has extra powers. That's all you're saying. So you can't do it that way.
What were his powers?
Super
strength, and he had
was impervious.
Not telepathic, but he had empathetic abilities.
Is Constantine a superhero film? Yes. That means the Sixth Sense is a superhero because he does exactly the same powers. Instead of demons, he can see dead people.
That's fine.
And he can talk to them.
Okay,
so if you guys can tell me the Sixth Sense is a superhero
like
film,
magical realism, Gooch.
Hey,
but Sixth Sense was not portrayed as a superhero movie.
Yeah, whatever, dude.
Unbreakable it's a young man coming to terms.
Supernatural thriller.
And they even shove the fact it's a young man coming to terms
with his superpowers. Just like Spider-Man. A young man coming to terms with his superpowers.
With great power, the problem is, you guys are
it's not a superhero film. And the next one might be, because I think that's the way they're going to show it. This is a suspense. I mean, it's a good one.
Before we move on to the casting topic, what is your guys' opinion on how this film fits into the zeitgeist of superhero films, given the fact that like a ton of them have been released since 2000?
I think the fact that we're talking about it now just it's just because of that, because it could be a superhero film. Fuck it, we'll call it a superhero film because they make more money. That's really what we're talking about here.
But they didn't market it that way when the movie first released. That's what I'm talking about.
When it was released, it wasn't like that.
Yeah, well, at the time, like, what are the big superhero movies that came out? X-Men.
There's the Spider-Man, X-Men, Blade.
Maybe Blade, yeah. But I don't know. Those movies, they're not the Iron Mans, the Captain Americas, dare I say Batman's. Like, even Batman in 1989 was a huge superhero movie. Like, X-Men was...
That was the biggest ones. Yeah.
You know, and like this... It,
so I know,
this
at the time they weren't a superhero film. Maybe
any sort of coattails or anything.
No. This was just like Sixth Sense Part 2, but with, you know... With like, you know, different type of story, but like the suspense was like that same suspense.
All right, so the deviant casting director. So Bruce Willis and Samuel L., this is the fourth film they actually have appeared in together. The first three being Pulp Fiction, Die Hard with a Vengeance, and Loaded Weapon 1, I think.
Is that a National Lampoon's movie?
I think it is.
Wait, Loaded Weapon? Bruce Willis wasn't in that, was he?
Apparently he was in it.
Apparently he was.
It must have been like a, but it must have been a cameo, though. So, because like the main character was Emilio Estevez in that one.
No, you're thinking of Hot Shots.
No, Hot Shots is Charlie Sheen.
You're thinking of the one with Emilio and Charlie Sheen, and that's got Keith David in
it. You guys are fucking idiots. Loaded Weapon is Samuel L. Jackson and Emilio Estevez. The one with Charlie Sheen and what's his face?
Oh,
and Emilio Estevez
right.
is the one with the trash can one. Men?
The Repo Man?
I don't know what they are, but that's that one, dude.
So of these four films, do you think that this is their best co-star?
No, I think.
What do you think it is?
Die Hard.
It's got to be, right?
Die Hard.
Do you think that Die Hard is better than Pulp?
White boy he hates.
Do you think that Die Hard's a better film than Pulp? Because I think they're better in that movie, but maybe Pulp Fiction is a better movie than that one.
But
I agree.
But,
I think Pulp Fiction overall is a better film.
They don't interact in Pulp Fiction.
No, they don't interact in Pulp Fiction. Yeah. They would have.
No,
they
he sees
once his face becomes a bum.
He doesn't see Samuel.
Yeah.
So they don't interact. They are in Pulp Fiction, but they don't
interact.
It's a shame
because they're awesome in Die Hard.
If Samuel L. Jackson would have never quit the job, what is his name? The character that Bruce plays in Pulp would have gotten killed.
Yes. Oh, because he wouldn't have been by himself.
Okay. Yeah.
He wouldn't have been by himself. He would have been taking a shit and then got shot by the Uzi.
Yeah. No, I said it's Hey Zeus, okay?
Yeah.
This film was written specifically for Bruce and Samuel, specifically. M. Night developed it specifically with them in mind and had already gotten them to sign on. Obviously, Bruce had been in Sixth Sense and Samuel, you know what I mean? So he hadn't done a movie with M. Night, but you know M. Night was hot after Sixth Sense. Can you guys see anyone other than Bruce and Samuel who could have done the roles?
The difficulty with that is that Sam Jackson is an iconic actor.
Yeah.
When he's like Gary Oldman, Bruce Willis, they're the type of people that when they're in a role, like I cannot see anybody else as Corbin
Dallas.
Yeah,
like, I don't see exactly. I think someone else could have played Bruce Willis's character. But not Samuel L.'s character. I don't see like Denzel playing this type of character.
You know who I thought could do it? Steve Carell could let me do it.
Who?
Steve Carell.
Steve Carell.
I could play, see it.
Steve Carell now.
Yeah.
Steve Carell then was still
play,
like just
play
super
Samuel L's
guy.
Character or play
yeah, Samuel
play...
L.
No, Bruce Willis.
I thought that maybe like Carl Urban could do like Bruce Willis's character maybe.
Carl Urban would have been too young. Bruce Willis's character was very quiet, yeah. very reserved, and I feel like you could probably put anybody in that role. Yeah. But at the same time, Bruce Willis has this sort of delivery when it comes to like, hey, I'm like a quiet guy, like
understated,
he's got that
yeah.
smirk. He just has that like that single, like subtle delivery. Like that's a Bruce Willis trait. And I yeah. think that particular like the way that David Dunn is, like, I just see that as Bruce Willis. Like,
I agree.
I think
does...
you could put anybody in that role and they could still do it. But for Mr. Glass, like that is Sam Jackson to it. Like that's a Sam Jackson role.
Yeah. Yeah.
They modeled his wig after Frederick Douglass, by the way. If anyone knows who he is,
I'll
go
that.
Back.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because Douglass, yeah. Glass, I don't know. It's just a weird little...
Glass is in the name,
yeah. exactly. It's a little weird little thing.
One thing I was reading up is that apparently Julianne yeah. Moore was the original choice for the wife.
Thank God. I hate her.
Which and then she... what is she... She didn't do this movie because she was doing something
Hannibal.
Else?
Bad choice.
Oh, that's right.
That's right,
Hannibal's
dude.
A terrible Cubbies. Movie.
Yeah.
By the way...
It's tough because...
It's not that bad.
I don't know, like, because the little boy eats his brain. That's
yeah.
Ah,
it's
man.
Not that bad, dude. I mean, because you don't like Julianne Moore.
I don't like Julianne Moore with her gums yeah. all that and her yeah. screaming
she's,
and yelling. I can't stand her.
Honestly,
attractive.
That movie isn't that bad. I don't mind that one.
I like Julianne Moore.
You like her?
Yeah. All of a sudden,
better not better yeah. than Robin Wright, for God's sakes.
No, I think Robin Wright's a better actress.
But she's, I mean, like in terms
in
of
this
attractiveness,
role, in this.
Oh.
That's tough.
What?
I don't know.
Are you kidding
wait,
me?
Wait, what? What did Robin Wright do before this, other than Princess Bride? Like, what was her first, like, the role that she did previous to this?
I don't think she acted for a long period of time because she was...
Was she married to what's-his-face?
She was married to Sean Penn, and she was, like, yeah. having a family. So I think she yeah. stopped acting for quite a while, so I don't know if she has any big roles.
I actually don't know now. I don't know
but,
what she was
now
in.
She's House
but,
of like, Cards and all this stuff, and, what, yeah. and Wonder Woman, but yeah.
Wonder watching Woman! Watching Robin Wright in this role, like, the way that she delivered it, and everything, like, when she's like, you know, I'm going to ask you a question. Whatever your answer is, it's not going to affect my decision. But
well, she was a Forrest Gump.
Did you see, like,
that was stupid. That made no
Jenny.
Fucking sense. That was the dumbest thing ever. Of course it's going to affect
well,
her. Go ahead.
Yeah, but and then, like, just the way that she did it, and, like, when he's like, no, and she just starts breaking down, like, I don't know, like, for whatever reason, like, seeing her as Buttercup, seeing her as Jenny, like, that is,
Jenny.
Like, I think that she delivered that perfectly. Like, that is a Robin Wright reaction, you know? And I think that was, like, honestly, like, to me, you got Bruce, you've got Sam, you've got Robin Wright. Like, that casting is perfect.
Yeah, she was, like, after that, she was in some, no, she was in, like, she was in Toys, I guess, and...
And oh, I forgot about that.
It's a movie called She's So Lovely in 87.
Dude, Toys? I love Toys. LL Cool J?
Speaking of Toys, I'm going to bring it up now. I had another thing, but uh-huh. speaking of Toys, there's a monologue that Sam gives, and he is like... in the shop when the guy's trying to buy that picture, and he's like, there's a little Asian kid. I don't know why he said the Asian kid, but okay. But he gave this monologue, and he's like, no, because that's a toy store, and this does not look a toy store, and whatever. He basically gave a version of the Marcellus Wallace look like a bitch
yeah,
speech.
So that dude.
He basically did. Does,
wait,
he
was,
asked,
he, was he in a toy store?
No,
he was in his art gallery.
That was
no,
his line.
And the guy's like, he's like...
That was the line yeah. that he delivered. Does
yeah,
it look,
he's
does
all.
It
does
look
it
like,
look?
Does it look like I'm that there's a little Asian kid on a toy on like a little rider
oh,
thing? Does it look like there's
gotcha,
a gum machine outside? No, because this isn't a toy store. This is a fine art.
Yeah.
This is an art gallery.
Yeah, and you're trying because yeah. you must think you're in a toy store because you're trying to buy a gift for a 4-year-old little Jeb. I think he says, and it's
okay.
basically yeah. a recreation of the Marcellus Wallace. Does Marcellus Wallace look like a bitch? Why are you trying to fuck him like a bitch?
Sam yeah. Jackson at his finest.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. If, I don't know if you could get someone else to that role.
To deliver those lines. I don't think Steve Carell could deliver those lines, but I'm curious if that
no.
actually was ad-libbed or not. Or he wrote
I'm gonna,
it thinking
I'm gonna add,
that
I'm gonna put this out there.
I knew Steven could deliver that. Steve Samuel could deliver that the way that he did. You know what I mean? I think maybe M. Night wrote it that way. The dude in the orange jumpsuit is in a show called... he's in a bunch of stuff. The one thing I noticed him from was he was in a show called Banshee, where he was like the main neo-Nazi leader before I think he got killed.
Really? Is that the guy?
Yeah, that character was actually supposed to be the Horde. Was supposed to develop really? Into the Horde. And, but then
oh, snap.
They took it out because of...
Who's the Horde?
That's the evil part, the evil personality of James McAvoy.
The James McAvoy character.
So
yeah.
What I read is that when David Dunn is in the train station and he's got his hands out and stuff, there's a woman that walks by and then he envisions her beating her child. That child is supposed to be James McAvoy's character.
That's dope.
Nice. That's dope. Yeah. I remember seeing that.
I think they rewrote it. He said he rewrote it given the fact that Unbreakable wasn't successful to make Split like a non-direct sequel so people wouldn't know it's a direct sequel until the end. Obviously, Split was successful, but I think in the moment they just took out that aspect of the guy in the orange jumpsuit being the Horde.
Gotcha.
I
thought his name was the Beast.
I read it was the Horde, but maybe the Beast is like a nickname.
Because I think I honestly I haven't seen Split yet, and this movie makes me want to watch it so badly.
Yeah,
in fact, I might even watch it tonight after we're done with this. But because I even in like all the trailers for Glass and all that stuff, they're referring to the Beast, the Beast, the Beast. So I don't know.
By the way, that kid that Gooch despises so passionately is 31 now and actually is cast in the movie Glass. Interestingly enough.
Yeah, he's the son. I just looked at it. He's making a comeback. I saw he was like in the Shield or Marvel's Shield or whatever that show is.
Yeah, he had a couple episodes apparently.
He's in that.
Okay. Let's go to the script. Now, all right. The Deviant Script Doctor. One of the things I wanted to ask you guys is, you mentioned before, Devo, that Bruce Willis plays this part very understated, very quiet. And I was wondering if you guys saw this, and I had this idea. I'm curious if he doesn't talk in a bunch of scenes because his character doesn't know what to say, or his character does know what to say, he just doesn't think that he should say it.
I think so. Watching this movie as an adult and in my like my current, I guess, emotional state, like I don't know, like I not that I related, but I feel like I understood this character a little bit more because he's in a place in his life where he just doesn't know what he's doing, where he's going, and he doesn't know, I feel that he doesn't know how he's supposed to react or reply or respond to things. But people are pushing him to like when he's the only one that survives that train and everybody's like, you're the only survivor, like what do you feel? And he's just like his reaction is like, I just want to go home, you know, like,
but he doesn't actually like, say it, which is interesting.
Yeah, but you look at him, he's just like it, and he's not like, oh my gosh, like you don't sense that he's like burdened by what's happening. He's just like, you know, I was just on this train and, you know, like, and then even like with all the stuff that's going on with his wife and she's just like, I want to start over, blah, blah, blah. And like, I can tell this when they're on their first date again, their quote unquote first date. And he's like, he's trying to play by rules, you know? And he's like, well, you know, that's not how you play the game. You're not supposed to be asking me these questions. And then all of a sudden, like, there's just something about this character that's like people are expecting so much from him and he doesn't really not that he doesn't know how to respond. He just doesn't have the emotional response that people want from him. And so he just delivers what he personally feels. And it's so muted that I think it drives people crazy. Like that's one reason why Sam Jackson's character is just pushing him and pushing him and pushing him to get that sort of superhero response. And it's not, and the only person that really gets that response from him is his kid.
Well, I mean, back to where, when they, they're at their date, him and his wife, I mean, he says it, he asks her, I mean, she asks him like, why do you feel so separated from us? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, well, why is these feelings? He's like, I just don't feel something is right, you know? And that he says it all right there. He literally doesn't feel.
And she even asks him like, do you resent
us? He doesn't feel and like what he should said, be standing. Yeah. So.
Why do you think that they weren't together anymore? Did she cheat on him or something like that? They don't actually say it.
No, he said it. He just said he was pushing them away.
But why was she sleeping in the other room?
Because like there was when you feel that there's no love between you and your significant other, you know, they think the love is gone, you know.
Yeah, but why didn't he sleep in the other room? That's usually the way it works. Well, at least traditionally,
he's sleeping with his kid.
He was sleeping with a kid, so they took the bigger room because of the kid.
But why did... It was a strange thing that the kid, like, latched onto him more than the mom.
Well, he was about to leave to New York.
Yeah, but they never really even show the mom and the kid really even affectionate towards each other either.
Well, they kind of allude to it because, like, they say that all the time, like, oh, she deals with the kid stuff. Oh, go call your mom if you get in trouble.
Because, like, even when he goes to the school because the kid got in the fight, he's like, why didn't you call my wife? And she's like, well, we called you. He's like, well, she handles all this stuff. And even the principal's like, well, what stuff? He's like, the kid's stuff.
Yeah, but it didn't seem like that. They never showed that. It didn't appear that way.
Well, they didn't show it. Well, I mean,
there's only so much in the movie time. Yeah, exactly. They're kind of telling you that it's happening.
And, I forgot what I was
saying. There's a scene where she, obviously the scene we talked about before, where she's like, you could just tell me I'm not going to be affected either way, which was fucking bullshit, obviously. And of course she was affected because she started crying afterwards, which is stupid, which obviously she was going to do. But the interesting thing about this whole thing about he's not talking is he doesn't say a word in the whole thing. He doesn't say a single word. And yet he conveys everything he needs to, because when she closed the door and turns around and you see his face, everything is on his face. You could tell how deeply affected he was. And I guess that's just a testament to Bruce Willis, I suppose.
Well, I mean, she asked him if he'd been with other women. He said no.
Yeah. Okay. And we said that.
That's all he said. But I mean, that was enough.
That's all you had to say.
Exactly. So,
one thing I forgot to say, you know, when he did the weightlifting, there's like another cool little thing of M. Night that I had written down here, where, like, every time he goes to lift, he tells his son, you should back up, it's getting dangerous, and eventually he's like inside the doorway, you know,
in the cabinet.
Was pretty funny. Okay,
and he's even like, he's like, what happens if something goes bad? Tell mom.
Exactly. There's a scene in the movie where Samuel L. makes this argument that comics and entertainment overall is like a form of history. And I've actually thought about this before. And I wondered, like we have historical, quote unquote, historical documents that we consider to be history. And a lot of times, like maybe the Iliad or Gilgamesh, like we think it's history, but we're not entirely sure if it's history. And
or people rising from the dead and walking on water, turning water into wine.
I mean, yeah, I guess you could say the Bible too. But I was curious if in 1,000 years, if all that was left of our civilization was something like Star Wars or like a comic book, do you think that they would think it was real, that people in the past actually could do those things?
Like, I think it would come down to whether or not.
Yes, because I think. Well,
I think it would depend on whether or not, like there'd be some catastrophic world-ending, like, event that would pretty much reduce humanity to just the minimal amount to survive, and they kind of get thrown into, like, a Stone Age. But if science continues like it goes now, no, I doubt that would happen. But
to continue on what Lucho was saying, like, if something happened and there was, like, no progress for a very long time, and all they had to rely on were, like, texts from the previous generation, then it depends on what those texts are, right? And that would be the huge main influence. And if, for whatever reason, like Star Wars and, I don't know, Unbreakable were, like, the texts that people were, like, pushing on, because, like, even look at Reign of Fire.
Yeah,
Reign of Fire, when they're talking about, like, a story from a long time ago in a galaxy, like, they're just telling The Empire Strikes Back, but these kids don't know any better. They think it's the real story of the Black Knight versus the White Knight, and then all of a sudden the Black Knight is the father of the White Knight, and blah, blah, blah. Like, it depends. It also depends on how people portray the story, which is why I think, like, stuff in the Bible is just like that, you know? It's just some person's reiteration of what's going on. So, one thing that I did really find interesting from what Sam Jackson's character was saying is that when you look at comic books, they are just sort of like fantasized versions of things that really happen. So, like, you know, for example, Superman, he can fly, shoot lasers from his eyes and stuff, but he's impervious to pain. He's very strong. Like, obviously somebody on this planet, which is David Dunn. So, it's just interesting to me to see how people are interpreting these things that might have already happened and telling them in a different light. So when you read a comic book, is this really just something of someone's imagination, or are they just retelling something that they've witnessed before?
There's another argument that he makes, I believe, I don't know if it's in the same monologue or not, but he makes this like antipode argument, I called it, where like if there's one extreme, then the opposite must also exist.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that one. It's a interesting argument to say, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It's something that is a typical superhero comic book like stereotype. Like you've got a Professor X, you've got a Magneto, you've got a you've got the Superman, you got the Lex Luthor, you got the Batman, you got the Joker. Like that's a comic book thing. In real life, I don't think it's so black and white like that. I think, you know, you've got your Donald Trumps, but then you've got like, you know, your there's, you know, other people out there. So it's a little bit different, I think, in real life, or at least the life that we're living right now. But I mean, you never know. Maybe it's something that we don't know, that we don't see, that could really be happening behind the veil of real life.
Do you guys think that why do you think that the kid wanted, I mean, obviously the scene where he tried to shoot him and everything, but why do you think the kid wanted his dad to be special so badly? Do you think it had something to do with he thought that if his dad was special, then that in turn made him special?
Yes, because there's a scene where the kid gets beat up in school and he and Bruce Willis are walking out and he's like, he says something like, I don't remember the exact words, but he says something like, if I was like you, then this wouldn't have happened to me. So he knows that his dad has this ability not to be hurt and to be super strong, and he wants that so bad. So I think that if he was able to prove to other people, specifically his mom, that if that happened, like his dad was like that, then something with him would be special. But there's something that, like, within David Dunn himself that makes him the way he is. And it's, you know, the kid. And one thing that I thought was interesting, and I read this on some trivia here, is that scene where the kid's pointing the gun at the dad, and then Bruce Willis is like, don't shoot me, don't shoot me. And all of a sudden he changes his story. He's like, you know what? If you shoot me, then that bullet is going to deflect off me and hurt your mom.
I think he says, I'm going to leave. He says, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go to New York because that's not what friends do to each other.
Yeah.
That's what he said. I guess what happened is that when George Reeves was playing Superman, the same thing happened to him. Some kid walked up to him with a gun and was like, you're Superman, I could shoot you, you'll be okay. And then George Reeves was like, you know what? If you shoot me because I'm bulletproof, the bullet will bounce off me and hit somebody else. And then that like diffused the whole situation. And I just thought it was really interesting that M. Night Shyamalan would pull from an actual like real life Superman character to tell something in a story like that.
Okay, so I got two quick funny questions for you guys. What would you do if you were the guy? What would you do to Samuel L. if you were the guy working in the comic shop when he was kicking over the comics?
I don't know. I'd probably do the same thing that dude did.
Would you have sold him the comic though?
Well, probably.
I mean, the guy probably just need that money.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that guy did the proper thing.
Yeah, but like, what are you going to do? You've got somebody that's handicapped in your store and they're like being all like weirded out. Like, what do you do? Like, he was trying to roll the guy out of his store, but he was obviously just being a dick and like knocking things over here and there. It's like, what are you going to do? Like, you're going to slap him in the face?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't even have tried to roll them, but that's me. My second question is, which should have been
out of my store.
The first one I should have asked because it like dovetailed into the one we were just talking about. Okay, so say the kid pulls the gun on you, right? You're Bruce Willis. When you get that gun back, do you pull a Ray Liotta on him?
If I was his character, no, because his character wouldn't do that.
As a father, no.
No, you wouldn't do that.
Well, Ray Liotta pulled it on his old lady.
Well, that's because she was all coked up. I mean, if the kid was all coked up, maybe I would have done that. Maybe I wouldn't. Yeah, But and he was all coked up too. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have done that. I thought about it. I'm like, I wouldn't have hit him. I mean, the wife was right there too. So
no, I didn't say hit him. Yeah, I mean, but like, say like if you ever do that shit again, type of shit, you know. But he didn't actually even threaten the kid. I don't even think the kid got in trouble. But
at the same time, that's I'm not sure who the did, character
is. Yeah,
that's not no, this character.
I don't think he did. It was just like that's the kind of character that David Dunn is. You know, he's just like he's just happy that things didn't turn out, and like he loves his kid, and like. Even when he goes to save that family and the next morning he's having breakfast, he, like, behind his wife's back, he tells the kid, like, you were right. Like, all along, you were right.
Yeah.
And, like, that is what gets them to reconnect, you know?
Yeah.
Like, really, like, really, his character, he was whacked out on drugs. He's stuck with the mob. His wife was crazy going on him and, like, thinking, like, he's, like, well, he was sleeping with everybody and you know, whatever, but...
Fool's half Irish, half Guinea, fool. I mean, come on now.
What do you expect? What do you expect?
Yeah, what'd you expect, fool? Jeez.
I thought it was pretty cool, some of the script writing clever tricks that M. Night utilized. Like, for instance, he introduced this idea that... every superhero has a weakness, right? And that Bruce Willis' weakness was water. And when he encountered finally confronted the man with in the orange jumpsuit, he got thrown over into water, you know, which I thought was, you know, fitting. Obviously, it was clever. And even the fact that he got rescued from that from the kids who he had rescued, I thought was pretty clever. The way that they revealed how evil Samuel Jackson was when he shook the hand, that was really clever too, I thought, as well. I thought it was awesome. I forgot that that's what he did. I thought he just looked at the wall and saw it. I forgot that they shook hands and he actually saw it as I was watching
the movie. And the line that he delivers, and like when, because Bruce Willis goes to him and he's like, you know what, you're right. I went and I saved all these people. Like, he's like, I fulfilled your superhero destiny. And all of a sudden, Sam Jackson's like, well, I guess this is the point where we shake hands. And then, like, because he knew that when he touched Bruce Willis, that Bruce Willis would learn the secret. And that, I thought, was a great twist. The only thing that fucks it up is at the very, like, as Bruce Willis turns away, then all of a sudden it does, like, this pause cut, and it's like, Sam Jackson's character was instituted in like this thing, and then it goes again, and then all of a sudden it cuts again. It's like, and then David Dunn was a security guard for the rest of his life. It's like, why, just wrap everything up in like this stupid text? Why not just be like,
it's like the Animal House quick thing, flash it's ridiculous. Forward
or something like that, you know? Like, it was, I don't know, like, that,
the son becomes that a football player.
those last 2 minutes were like,
really bad.
I don't know. To me, that it just deflated the entire ending of the movie.
I thought I thought it was funny because that postscript was reminiscent to me of like a film based on a true story. And I thought that it was out of place in a film that was fiction. I don't know if that's what he was going for, if he was trying to use that as a device to show the viewer that there's some realism to this. But it did feel strangely out of place. But I think given the fact that they made more movies, I think that's why it maybe feels more out of place. If that was it and that's all you got. And especially considering what it said, because it actually said that Samuel L. was in a psychiatric ward or whatever for the criminally insane. But when we see the trailers of Glass, that Bruce is also in there. Or it's unclear if Samuel's in there. I think he was in there.
Yeah, he was in there too.
So I thought that was interesting. Samuel L., do you guys think that he's like batshit crazy, or you think that there's some method to his madness?
Oh, I think there's method to his madness, which I think we're going to find out in Glass.
But he was mass murdering people.
Yeah, he was. So he's put in that situation.
Yeah.
But I think at the same time within that area, he's like, all right, there's another person out there that's evil like I am, when he finds out who the Beast is. So he pulls all the strings to get the three of them together, because his ultimate arch nemesis is David Dunn, Bruce Willis's character. So he's going to use this tool, the Beast, to destroy his arch nemesis.
Okay, one last one before we get to It's Just So Ridiculous. Obviously what he did in the house, theoretically you would stay in the house and like wait till the police got there and so forth and so on, right? but obviously he gets away because he's supposed to be like some unknown person who is like, people don't know who his identity is, which you have in like the trope you have in a lot of superhero movies. So I was like, okay, he just went home. There's no police. And then that is a plot device to like have the paper and everything. But when he went into the room and he picked up Robin Wright, brought her into the room and just cuddled with her, like he tapped it, right? Or he just cuddled with her.
I think he's cuddled with her.
I think he's just cuddled with her because when they're on their date,
he could finally fall asleep.
Well, because she's like, when was it that you knew things changed between us? And he's like, I woke up from the nightmare and I couldn't tell you because I didn't want to wake you. And like that was the snowball. That is what was rolling down the hill and built up for everything. And then once he saves his people, he found his thing. Because I think he resented her for losing his football career because he didn't want to risk losing her. And because he found that outlet, and then he realized, okay, now I got that release. I could be the man I want to be now. And then he finally picks her up, and like the entire shot is just him carrying her up the stairs, but the camera stays on her face and she's just staring back at him. And then when they lay down, he cuddles with her, and then he's like, I had a bad dream. So like that is tying up that loose end that he had way back in the day that caused all these problems.
I know that, but he's in real life, he still would have hit it though.
I don't think so. I mean, I mean it comes down to he hadn't had a good night's sleep like forever. I mean, that was the whole thing. Even Mr. Glass asked them, "How was your sleep? You know, did you wake up with that same feeling?" And he said no, because he finally had a decent night of calm sleep with his wife, what he always wanted to, you know.
Yeah,
what
after
he wanted.
Some
so
intense.
I very much doubt it, dude. Maybe in the morning, fool. Maybe she gave him like a morning blowy.
Yeah, woke him up real nice. Yeah.
I mean, she looked pretty hot when in the morning. She had that, you know, she had just had the shirt on and whatnot and her underwear. That was pretty hot.
Okay. okay, let's get to It's Just So Ridiculous. My first thought was, could baby's arms and legs really be broken? Because it felt like they were like rubber, but I couldn't. I tried looking up this osteogenesis imperfecta, and I didn't quite find whether or not that was possible. But they do have blue on the whites of their eyes, which I thought was crazy. And I know that they said that Samuel L.'s palette was predominantly purple. But if you notice when he when he shakes the hand and gets a reveal, most of the shots are in black and white, but he is distinctly in blue, unless I'm colorblind. Yeah. But I think he's distinctly in blue. His clothes are in blue. And I think obviously his cane was blue because it was glass.
Yeah, well, if you noticed every single time, like his outfit was black, right? But when you saw the lapel on the inside, it was like a bluish tinge to it. All of his clothes were like that.
Yeah.
So there was, I guess that was the whole thing about him having a disease or something. But that was, you know, it would always have that blue, the blue lining inside his clothes.
How long do you guys think that the man in the orange jumpsuit had been at the house before Bruce showed up? Like one night or like some nights?
I feel like it was like a week or something like that.
But like, how could he have gotten away with it? The neighbors would have noticed, right?
That's what I thought. But you look at the mail, like when Bruce goes in the house, like there's a ton of mail on the floor. And even the dude, like he goes to the front, he grabs the mail and he's like looking around but I thought it was just the guy living in the house. I didn't realize he had two kids and a wife.
No.
Like,
even when you watched it back this time, you had forgotten about that?
I had forgotten about it too.
And like they didn't once like yell and scream or anything. Like,
yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. So when he goes to untie them, they would. You think they would really be silent like that,
dude?
They
if
were
you're
just
not
tied
if,
up,
if you
they
haven't
opened
eaten
the door
anything
being in
for
darkness,
a week,
and if they would have been in darkness, they would open up the door. They wouldn't have been able to see anything. And when they did, it was like a guy with a trench coat on. You couldn't even see his face. It would have been freaked out. They would maybe.
Dude, you haven't. Imagine if he's been there for a week. You know, water, no food for a week. You could probably hardly move. I'm surprised those kids would get
probably,
down.
Like,
they're probably
get down the steps. I'm shocked.
They were so like. I think they were trying to show that they were so weak that they couldn't do. Obviously, the kids, they were able to regain their strength and save a full-grown man
from
the pool.
Miraculously.
But the wife, like, I thought it was crazy that like she was all tied up and the dude's like spitting beer at her and stuff, and then David Dunn unties her and all of a sudden she's dead.
By the way, I forgot the wife was dead. I think she just
They said it was dead. In the paper it says both parents are dead.
Yeah.
Parents are dead.
Two kids survive.
Oh, so she was already dead the whole time. The thing I don't get when you mention the drinking beer, if this dude knocked Bruce Willis off the balcony into the pool, why would he even think that he was dead? Wouldn't he go down to investigate? Because most people would die there.
No, most people would die in that thing. That thing's a death trap.
Yeah, but he would at least want to. If you're, if you at least want to go down to see, right?
That plastic film over the water is a death trap. If you fall into it, unless you have help, there's a 90% chance you're fucking dead. That's why they don't have them anymore.
And they didn't show it, but the guy probably watched him fall into the thing and then fall into the pool.
Yeah.
And then he's like, all right, that's it. I'm going to go grab a beer. And I'm going to do my daily routine of spitting beer on this chick. And then the kids come out and save him. Yeah. And then all of a sudden the dude, like, and that was a cool scene too. When Bruce Willis gets pulled out of the pool and he's like, huh, and then he stands up and he's just like, all right, this is a superhero right here. He's going to go do his thing right now.
I honestly thought the whole time I was watching, because I forgot exactly all the little details that happened, I thought that at any moment that guy was going to come down and attack Bruce Willis. So I guess maybe I interpreted it different than you guys did. The last thing that I wanted to say, M. Night is in the film. He's in most of his films. But he plays a drug dealer. Let's be real. Come on. Come on. Really?
I mean,
it was his choice. Well, so, he wanted to do it. Like, yeah,
he doesn't
know.
Look like a drug dealer.
How were drug dealers supposed to look? I bought plenty of E from Indian guys. So what the hell? How do you know?
M. Night?
Well, I mean, they're Indian dudes. I don't know. They all look the same. Exactly. I mean, the problem is, I didn't participate in any of these transactions.
What I'm saying is that drug dealers are anyone.
That's what I'm trying to say. They could be anyone. That's what I'm trying to get at. I'm pretty sure that's what he's trying to portray. Yeah. I mean, M.I. Chamon doesn't really look like one, but I mean, you never know.
Okay. The Kim Coppola Award for the worst acting performance in the film. I think we already have Gooch's, vote.
Yeah, as a kid for me, it's terrible. He was terrible in Gladiator. He's terrible in this film.
Oh, he wasn't. I'm gonna break the tie.
I'm gonna go with in the football stadium, the drug dealer.
Yeah, M. Night was up there too for me because he did a terrible job.
He's just like, what? What? Can I go now? Can I go now?
Yeah. Okay. I thought about M. Night being like, it. What do you guys think of Glass's mom?
She wasn't that bad.
I liked her, with the exception, like, reading up, knowing that she is, the actress is physically younger than Sam Jackson.
What?
Yeah, she's, four or five years younger than Sam Jackson.
Oh, my God. I didn't think that... You know, it's one of these movies where, other than the M. Night thing, I really didn't notice anyone acting particularly bad, but I think that might be because I've already seen the movie, so I kind of have an idea of what I would have, I'm expecting, so to speak.
And when it comes to kid actors, the expectations can't be too high, right?
The problem is I hated him in Gladiator and I hated him here. So
was he better than Jake Lloyd?
Yes.
Resounding. Yeah. But I mean, this kid was he's 14 in this film.
He's just gotten Haley Joel?
Six. It would have been
no. I think that
would have
been two on the nose.
Yeah.
Two on the nose after right after Sixth Sense. Nah.
Yeah, and the other kid actor that was big, that was the kid from Mercury Rising, and he did a terrible job in that one too. So I guess there was not that many kid actors at the time to do it, to play this role.
What's the most deviantly repeatable quote for you guys?
I've always liked the kids called me Mr. Glass. I mean, that was one of the ones we always bring up, and I've always loved that line from this film.
Yeah,
it's like a classic comic book movie, like a line, you know. And they put it in this thriller movie. So I always love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you, Glenn? What do you think?
You know, I didn't feel like the dialogue in this movie stood out in any particular way other than the some of the Sam Jackson dialogue monologues that he had. But I don't remember the quotes. That's the thing. I don't remember verbatim what he was saying. So I don't know. I guess I don't have one really.
Well, I think another thing too is that like this movie hasn't been as rewatchable as like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So when you think of when you think of Samuel L. giving speeches, that's not going to be the first one you think of.
No, it's always it's always the one from Pulp Fiction.
For how long have we known each other? Like for how long we've known each other? This is the second time I've seen this movie. How often have we watched Pulp Fiction?
Often.
And what do we always say? We always call it, I'm Mr. Glass.
In varying levels of sobriety also.
Okay. Do you guys think that, obviously, I mean, I guess the answer is obviously no, that they shouldn't remake this movie. But if they, like, say in 20 years they wanted to remake this movie, what things about it would you change? Or it's just not necessary, like Star Wars.
I don't think they need to remake it, but I mean, you know, movie is going cycles, so there might be remakes. I don't know.
I'd like to see some more ethnic diversity. I thought maybe Robin Wright could be cast as like an ethnic woman, and the kid could be like a half.
Because Philly is more, yeah.
I mean, I get the reason why Bruce Willis has to be in the movie, because he's Bruce Willis, you know what I'm saying? What if The Rock was in the movie? I don't know, it seems less realistic, because Bruce Willis isn't physically imposing like The Rock is, you know?
No.
But I think that's the idea behind Devin Dunn.
That's a new superhero.
It's not supposed to be, it's not supposed to be like this guy who you look at and you're like, oh my gosh, that guy's a badass, right? It's supposed to be like this just,
every
like
guy.
He's soft, he's quiet, he's like, you know, like nobody's, I don't think anybody's really afraid of this guy. And if anything, he's more afraid of himself because of how vulnerable he sees himself. But then all of a sudden now he's got these superpowers. So like you put somebody like The Rock in there, I think that completely defeats the purpose. You got to put somebody like, I don't know, like somebody like just like a Michael Cera, you know, like he would probably make it too comedic, but like somebody that you look at and you're like, that is not a strong person. And then all of a sudden that person's got these abilities.
I was actually thinking if you were to make an Unbreakable game, that I would like it to be like a Quantic Dream type of game. I think it would actually be a really good Quantic Dream type of game, actually. What do you think, Diva?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's got to be something where, like, because there's no action, so it can't be action. It's got to be something that's, like, choice-driven, like a choose-your-own-adventure sort of thing, and then maybe, like, your actions dictate whether or not you're going to be the superhero character or fall more and, like, join Mr. Glass in the end, you know?
Yeah, I think, actually, if they were going to remake it, I would prefer them to make a game, actually, rather than another movie, because the movie is pretty good as is. What do you think, Gooch?
Yeah, I agree. It'd probably have to be a game like what is it? Heavy Rain. There's another one.
Yeah, Heavy Rain.
I don't remember
exactly.
It'd have to be a game like that. But I mean, I wouldn't play it because I don't really like those games. But I would watch.
I love those games.
I they're not really my type of style. I mean, unless he's going breaking through walls and like breaking Mr. Glass in half, you know, it's not really my game.
Well,
but
be
yeah,
fighting the Horde, fool.
True, but unless the Horde is like, you know, actually like raping the women in there, but you know, it's not really my game. You know, I mean, it's,
so you're not gonna help. You're not gonna do anything unless women are getting raped. Is what you're saying?
No, I mean, I guess probably.
Okay,
it's
too much Conan.
It wouldn't be my type of game. I mean, unless there have to be like some shotgun. I'm like, Doom is scary and all, but it's, I mean, you're still a guy with a big old shotgun killing demons. That's my type of game. That's my drama.
Do you guys recommend this movie?
Oh, I love this film. I had forgotten how much I love this film. I recommend it.
Yeah, like not even finishing the movie. Like I went to Twitter. I'm like, I can't believe how much I love this movie. Like I forgot how good it was.
Yeah, I would recommend to anyone.
What? I don't think that the movie can compare to a Marvel movie. It's just a different type of movie. So if people are looking for like something superhero-ish, I don't think this is what you're going to get. But I think that if you're patient, there's some really good stuff in this movie. I don't think it's particularly appropriate for kids, per se. Nor do I think that they would be particularly interested in the movie, depending how young they are. But I think it's a great film. It's one of M. Night's best, probably his best movie, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's one that's up there. I mean, but the problem is, I wouldn't even say that it's the problem. Since they're making, Glass into like the superhero film, I wouldn't even tell them this is a superhero film. This is just straight up a thriller. That's what it is. A suspense thriller. And that's what I would tell him. Like, it's a really great suspense thriller. If you expect somehow some Marvel or DC superhero bullshit, you should look somewhere else. Because this is actually a film and not one of those, you know? So.
So, yeah. So, Glass is coming out on January 18th. We're recording on January 11th. This episode should debut on January 16th, I believe. If you want to enjoy Glass to its fullest extent, check out Unbreakable, possibly Split like Devo said he's going to do right now. And we'll see you guys next week.
Have a good one.
See you later.